This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from Honolulu, Hawaii, overlooking Greater Oahu. The lead stories are Family Tree DNA wants to trade your privacy to catch criminals. And there's a spin on that. Apple may open up supply chain to allow more repairs of more devices. The FCC has levied massive fines against robocallers, but you'll be shocked on how much they've collected. Do you guys remember Prenda Law? Remember them? Well, they're back in the news. I want to welcome you to episode 1356 of the Geek News Central podcast for Thursday, March 28th. This show is sponsored by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Or you too can support this show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider. I want to give a warm, warm welcome to all the new listeners, all the brand new folks that are part of the Ohana here. Thank you for tuning in for the show for the very, very first time. And for those of you that are longtime listeners and been with the show for many years or a day or a month or a week or whatever it happens to be, welcome back. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. But for those of you who are brand new, it's real simple. All you got to do is come over to Mission Control. You just come over to geeknewscentral.com, get subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Android, by email, on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, or using the old school mainstay RSS feed. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, click on the more subscribe options link. That'll get you tied in so that you know how to subscribe to a podcast, because we don't want you to miss a single episode. And all that is found, again, on the homepage at geeknewscentral.com. Of course, while you're on the webpage, you can sign up for the newsletter. The newsletter contains everything I'm going to talk about tonight. All the links that I would basically is going to be on the blog post will go in an email to you immediately following the show. So the most important thing to do, again, is go to geeknewscentral.com, get signed up for the, basically get subscribed to the show. Join the podcast revolution. Of course, you can watch the show on the Apple TV. Just look up Geek News Central there. Listen on blueberry.com. You can listen on your smart home device. It's real simple. Just say the keyword to launch that device to make it listen to you and say, play the podcast, Geek News Central. This show is also right now live. We are live at live.geeknewscentral.com. You can join us usually 8 p.m., around 7:30 to 8 p.m. Hawaiian Standard Time for a couple of more months. And you can catch the show there. That's a great way to stay connected to the podcast when we're live, if you're awake. Of course, we are on Twitter, we're on Twitch, we're on Mixer, we're on Facebook. Really, we're just about everywhere you are watching content. So take care of that and join us live sometime. Of course, we have a Mastodon chat server at geeknews.chat. So if you want to join the chat, you can do so as well. Don't forget here, don't forget, Ohana, that the Slack channel remains and the cool kids hang out on Slack. So definitely drop me an email, say, hey, I want to be part of the cool kid club, join the Slack channel, and we'll get you set up. As always, if you have comments on today's show, you can do so. geeknews@gmail.com is the email address, geeknews@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Geek News. You can follow me on Facebook. Partner shows of this podcast include GNC Week in Review by Kirk, The Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain, The Pro Gear Site by the GNC team, which will be really livening up here as we get closer to NAB, The New Media Show, co-hosted by myself and Mr. Rob Galini, and of course, the Podcast Legends Show. So one thing that I do want to do is the Podcast Legends Show, once I get on a different time zone, much, much easier to do that show. So I hope to revive it once we make the transition from Hawaii to the mainland. You can always pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. And of course, we want to thank the longest running continuous sponsor of a podcast. That's our good friends at GoDaddy.com. And you too can save money. We are down to the wire, down to the end of the month. I'm looking at the numbers, got my fingers crossed. You know, I'm always like this at the end of the month because I don't know quite exactly where we are. But if you've been holding off or thinking about a domain name or a hosting account, this might be the time. whether it be 30% off a new product purchase at GoDaddy. And this is a big deal. It's a big savings code. No, hardly anyone else has this code. Okay, this is an important thing. We've got the great deals for hosting, excuse me, and the 99cent.com, but when you're picking up other stuff, that 30% code can save you huge. Buying a dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, you're buying a commerce system, you're doing email, whatever you may be getting, which is a huge stack of stuff that GoDaddy offers to make your business really explode. This is where you can use that 30% off code. Of course, for new customers, for people that haven't purchased anything at GoDaddy before, or basically new or transferred .com, that 99cent.com is there for you. One time good deal on that. You get to use that once if you're a listener of the show. One time, that's it. Of course, the dollar a month economy hosting, use these all day long. A dollar a month economy hosting with a free domain. A dollar a month managed WordPress hosting, again, with a free domain. All these for the first year, $12, get you going, get your free domain, get your website. Really, with that website or that .com costing $8.49, you know, $351 is what it costs you for a domain for the year. All right. Or just, you know, just break it down a dollar a month. So there's no one that listens to this show that cannot afford a $12 for the first year hosting account. Make sure you look at those ongoing year cost, of course. And make sure you lock in 1 year when you hit that subscribe button over there. A dollar a month free trial of GoDaddy website builder, your choice of personal, business, or business plus plans. Again, all these codes are available at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. We want you to use them. Your utilization of these codes keeps the lights on. It will hopefully help pay for my new roof, garage door, painting, and moving cost. It's going to be a stretch, but thank you for your support again. And it keeps the podcast online. I'm excited about what we're going to be doing in the future here, and definitely keeps the independent writing team employed. They cost me money every month. And again, you're supporting a small team of independent content creators here. We are not, you know, CNET or any of those other ones that have big mega companies behind them with millions of dollars. No, it comes out of Todd's pocket. So make sure you get over there and support GoDaddy. Link to the page. Talk about it with your friends. Send a Facebook link. Anything you can do to help us out. And I definitely appreciate your ongoing support of the sponsor here at Geek News Central. And that, of course, is our friends at GoDaddy, which you can receive these discounts. geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Okay, so let me move on and get into just a quick stack of stuff before we get into the full-blown show tonight. New media show tomorrow should prove to be interesting. Another $100 million being dumped into the space by Spotify. Crazy money. Crazy. $100 million. It's been told it's many, many, many times revenue. Hello. hey, Spotify. Hello. Holy cow. Crazy, huh? But anyway, trucking firm bids, it's a little bit challenging. Some trucking firms say, oh, we're not bringing that up to your residential area. And others were like, yeah, send us some pictures so we can see how much curbside space there is, blah, blah, blah. So I think I've got 2-3 that are going to send me bids. They're all about the same. About $400 to $500. It's crazy to drop a 20-foot trailer, bring it 20 miles, drop the trailer, come back 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days later, pick it up and take it 20 miles back to the container yard. And, but, you know, it is what it is, right? So getting that done. I've got the final bid on the container actually done. That came in this afternoon. I got 30 days to execute on that. One thing, you know, Michael Dare said, hey, Todd, go to Home Depot. They've got packing supplies there. So I went into Home Depot, and while I'm standing there looking at this stuff, and they've got a good selection of packing materials, my wife walks up and she goes, just order that stuff on Amazon. And I'm like, when I checked some other places the other day, it wasn't cheap. She says, no. And she brought up, you know, plastic wrap, bubble wrap. It all was a buck or two a piece, you know, cheaper. And I thought, wow, I'm shocked, you know. And of course, I'm looking at it. I'm saying, well, it's right here in front of me. And she's like, all right, so you're going to save 23 cents on each one of those. You're going to use 100 of those. And then, you know, she's like guilting me into, you know, making sure that I don't spend an extra $100, which is smart and everything. So I've been looking at pricing, and there's no shipping. I don't know how Amazon is doing it. I'm happy that they are, but who knew that you could order home shipping supplies from Amazon, and they're essentially cheaper than everything I can find here locally in Hawaii. You know, I'm sure in the mainland, when you're in a non-Hawaii shipping zone, it's probably even cheaper, but you might even pick up locally cheaper than Amazon, but that's what it is. Also, I've been talking a little bit with my sister, and I've got to get back into the space that I'm going to be putting the studio in, just because I need to run a tape measure. I need to get pictures so that in the several months before I am back there, or 6 weeks before I'm back there, I can really start to concentrate on what I'm going to do. And if I need to get some carpenters in earlier, all that stuff. So, I'm scheduled to go to Columbus, on April 20th. I fly out the 20th. I get into Columbus on the 21st. I may just, immediately, drive up to Michigan, spend the night, do the measurements, get the pictures that I need, and then drive back to the office and be in mid-morning on the 22nd. It's too late to change airline tickets. It's not worth it to do it. And a Sunday drive probably won't be so bad, and a Monday morning drive won't be so bad, but it all depend on how sideways I am from flying all night. But if I do, it's just going to be a day in and get the data and everything. Because I'm asking my sister for stuff, and it's hard to get everything that I want, exactly that I want from her, without me being there. So, but anyway, that's what's going on. And just, you know, I was kind of thinking about that this afternoon a little bit. It isn't confirmed. I may not do it. I might be nuts to make the quick run up there, but, cause things aren't going to move that fast, cause I'm going to have to, you know, once I make a decision in my head that I'm going to have to be there and tell the carpenter this, and this. And, and we've got lots of Amish carpenters in the neighborhood, and they're really good. And I'll probably just use them to do the work. They're fast. They're, reasonable. And I know when I get done, I'm going to have a quality product that's going to look fantastic. So anyway, we'll see what happens, but, that's what's going on. So let's go ahead and get into, you guys, you know, I've been talking enough about this move. I got to find insurance. That's the only thing I haven't found yet, is shipping insurance. So I got to do some Googling on that and see what I have to do to come up with shipping insurance. And just, I'm sure it's going to be easy. I just haven't looked at it. And so anyway, we'll see what goes on. All right, let me go ahead and pop these windows and we get this ready to move on. And if you're watching on any of the live streams, please say hello. If you're on YouTube, if you're on Facebook, if you're wherever you may be, wherever you're watching the show, give a shout out and say hi. Definitely would appreciate it. And that way I know that you're watching. All right, so let's talk about family tree DNA. This blows me away. The at-home DNA testing company Family Tree DNA is asking customers to share their genetic data to help law enforcement solve crimes. A video featuring Ed Smart, the father of kidnapping victim Elizabeth Smart, attempts to frame the sharing of its genetic database with FBI as a positive. According to MIT Technology Review, the video will air as an ad in San Diego, where police were recently able to solve a 1979 murder after finding a link in a public available DNA database. Now, let me explain that. Do you think you have any criminals in your family? Is there an uncle or an aunt or a you know, someone in your family DNA tree, in your genealogy tree, that you think is a criminal? Is there an uncle's kid that you think killed somebody? Is there someone in your sphere of your family who has maybe raped someone? Because with them asking you to share your genetic data with law enforcement, you might be responsible for getting a family member put in jail. Now, in some parts of the country, you know, that could go badly for you. And depending on your family and what they do and how they are, you know, some family there's a rotten egg. You know, sometimes there is, you know, or maybe you don't even know. So we all can feel when a loved one is the victim of a violent crime. You know, I especially, you know, I have a cousin we've talked about on the show. Her three boys, were kidnapped by the father and more than likely killed by the father. Now, it's a good, we know who the suspect is. He's in Jackson prison, not for murder. For something like unlawful restraint or some type of a kidnapping type of charge, he's in for 10 years or so. But at some point, he's probably going to get out. Now, we can feel for our loved ones that are a victim of a violent crime and want answers. So on one side, if we have family members who have been the victim, we want those potential family members that are relatives to whoever may have done this to be able to voluntarily give up their genetic data. But if you're on the other side of the table and you're the family that has a bad rotten egg over there, do you want to be the one that causes that person to get arrested? In the case of the 1979 murder in San Diego, law enforcement found a distant relative of the murderer, Paul Jean Chatoran, whose DNA was in the database. Police then worked backwards to find Chatoran's direct family members, who also provided DNA. They were then able to identify him as the source of the blood found at the crime scene. While police are embracing genetic genealogy as a way to solve decades-long cold cases, privacy critics and bioethicists argue that such tactics intrude upon civil liberties. Family tree DNA does allow customers to opt out of sharing such information with law enforcement. Police can only access the same information that regular customers can on family tree DNA, but genealogy sleuths should be wary. A simple search warrant or court order can give the police access to even more of your personal details. They do say they will not voluntarily work with law enforcement and will require a search warrant. But it does give you pause to think about this. If you think you've got a relative that did something and you think that relative should have been punished, but never was, and all they needed was potentially some DNA, well, goes the other way too, right? So what do you guys think about this? What do you think? I'm trying to think of my family. Do we have any bad eggs? On the other side, no, not that I know of. You know, obviously the one bad egg is in Jackson prison, but he's not part of our genealogy mix. But, you know, the way it's amazing how distant relatives outwards and downwards and even upwards of the genealogy food chain can be detected because of, you know, so many pairs. So it makes you think a little bit, doesn't it? So I'd be curious. Are you going to make your DNA public? And if you want to reply by email, just send me an email, geeknews@gmail.com, and tell me, yes, if I do a DNA test, I'm going to make it available to the to law enforcement. You know, having been prior military and had a DNA test taken, I already signed my rights away. My DNA and all my information is in the database already because of the, you know, basically the military wanted to have a way, number one, if I got splattered in an aircraft crash, a way of identifying my remains. And number two, it just went into the database. And I'm sure a lot of federal employees don't know that. If they've already had DNA collected, that is, you've often signed your rights away to that information being made publicly available. All right, switching gears here, kind of exciting news. An internal document shows that Apple is capable of implementing right to repair legislation. But this basically, the program looks almost exactly like the requirements of right to repair that has been proposed in 20 states. Now, Apple continues to fight legislation that would make it easier for consumers to repair their phones. But according to the presentation titled Apple Genuine Parts Repair, dated April 2018, the company has begun to give some repair companies access to Apple diagnostic software, a wide variety of genuine Apple repair parts, repair training, and notably places no restrictions on the type of repairs that independent companies are allowed to do. The presentation notes that repair companies can keep doing what they're doing with Apple Genuine Parts, Reliable Parts Supply, and Apple Process and Training. So this, broadly speaking, is what right to repair activists have been asking for states for many, many years. And folks are saying this looks like a framework for complying with right to repair legislation. Kyle Willen, CEO of iFixit and prominent member of the right to repair movement, told the folks at Motherboard on the phone. He says right now they're only offering it to a few mega chains, but it seems clear to me that they would be totally possible to comply with the right to repair. You know, I got a MacBook down here. The only thing we need is a motherboard, right? Motherboard and a keyboard, and it would be back in business, the one that got the chemical spilled on it. But no, those parts were not available. I could take it to Apple and have it repaired for a tidy sum. Interesting move here, huh? All right, so we'll see what happens. But hopefully they're loosening its grips on the iPhone and Mac repairs. It would be exciting if they did. We'll have a little competition in this space. Maybe, I guess it all depends on the cost of the repair items. But when more people are allowed to repair, where's the savings at? Labor. You know, if the labor costs go down, then the parts cost are what the parts cost. And you have a little competition in the space. All right, the FCC, listen to this number. The FCC fined robocallers $208 million since 2015, but they've only collected $6,790. The FCC and FTC failed to collect the vast majority of robocall fines. They fined people $208 million. Now, for you that are on Verizon, don't leave tonight. If you're listening to the show during the day, don't go anywhere. I got big news, big news near the end of the show. All right. So these robocallers only paid up $67.90, and they got that information from a Freedom of Information Act request. Separately, the FTC has collected $121 million out of $1.5 billion worth of penalties issued against robocallers since 2004. The dearth of financial penalties collected by U.S. government in violations of telemarketing and auto dialing shows the limits that the FTC and FCC, you know, the limits of what they've been able to collect. And oftentimes the FCC tries to settle with violators for some amount lower than the proposed fine. And the FTC has more authority than the FCC to require refunds for consumers and shut down robocall operations. But it just goes on and on and on. Why aren't they collecting these fines? Maybe they can't. Maybe they don't know who the heck's even running these operations and are unable to go in there and pull the plug on them. But this is why our phones are exploding off the hooks. It's why today, 13 calls in an hour. They all of a sudden they hit me. The Pakistani robocallers woke up and started dialing, or wherever the heck they came from, India or wherever it was, whatever the sweat room was. It's always that telltale sign. You answer the phone and you hear click, click. They can't hardly disguise it. Click, click. And so now I'm so pissed off at doing this. I basically hit mute on the speaker or on the microphone, and I just put the phone down and I let them talk to themselves for as long as they will figure out I'm not listening. Just trying to slow them down a little bit. It drives me crazy. I just used to hang up on them, but they would just call me back in 2 minutes from a different number. Like I was so stupid to answer the phone again. But help is here. All right. The U.S. wants copyright troll. Hey, remember Penda Law? The United States wants copyright troll lawyer in prison for 12 and a half years. So Paul Hansmeier, one of the lead attorneys of the controversial law firm Prenda, of which the Pirate Bay played a crucial role in the case since it was where Prenda uploaded porn to extract settlements from alleged pirates. Hansmeier admitted his wrongdoing, but is requesting a more lenient sentence of a little over 7 years. The now defunct Prenda law firm repeatedly deceived courts. We talked about them a lot on this show. And of course, most controversial was a shocking revelation that Prenda uploaded their own torrents to the Pirate Bay, creating a honeypot for people they later sued over pirated downloads. And, you know, we started talking about this a long time ago. And so anyway, we'll see what these guys actually get, what time he gets. In total, Prenda Law generated $3 million from fraudulent copyright lawsuits. Going to jail for 12 years, was that worth $3 million? But while it's by no means illegal to go after file sharers, the Prenda attorneys crossed the line by repeatedly lying to or misleading the courts. This is where they got in trouble. And Hansmeier also filmed and produced many of the videos himself, leading the court to believe that they were from a third-party porn company. It's insane. Insane, insane, insane. So they're recording the pornos themselves. So I hope he gets 12 and a half years. It's been a long time coming. It's surprising it's taken this long, right? All right, let's move on here. Oh, ho, 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 look who's in the news. Huawei? Huawei? The UK reports details new and existing Huawei security issues. The United States has been very vocal about its qualms by the Chinese tech giant Huawei, going as far as a charge with a laundry list of crimes from stealing trade secrets to wire fraud, but the European governments have taken a more quiet approach. This may finally be changing. A new report reveals that the UK is unhappy with Huawei's tech and concerned about the risk it brings to the country's telecommunications networks. The annual report from the Huawei Cybersecurity Evaluation Center Oversight Board points out significant technical issues in Huawei's engineering process that leads to new telecom risk. Additionally, Huawei failed to address the security concerns raised by the board in last year's report. And of course, Huawei says that it takes these concerns very seriously. But yet we are arms of the Chinese Red Communist government. do we not, how stupid can we be to not think that they're completely compromised? They're cheap. But yes, how can we not? How can we not, even for a moment, think they are not completely compromised? This is just the tip of the, it's just, oh my gosh. We are so stupid. We are so dumb. And having shipped so much of our high-tech industry to China, chip making, all that stuff that we've given up here in the United States, they don't have to have a war with us. They just shut down the electronic food chain. Craziness. But let's move out of this world a little bit. The Hubble telescope, yes, it's still up there. It's still in operation. Captured a rare disintegrating asteroid. So two long narrows of material streaming from 6478 Galt, a 2.5-mile wide rock in the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Galt completes one rotation every 2 hours, but it's so fast that the asteroid is flinging material off its surface into open space. And they say it is basically disintegrating. And it's got quite the light show that's been detected from the Hubble and the observatories here in Hawaii, Spain, and also in India. So some pretty cool pictures that they put online about this. And you just wonder what it looks like, you know, how much stuff is actually spinning off. It's got to be a lot to put up a light show like this. But anyway, a little bit of stuff going out in space. I guess you don't want to drive a spacecraft through that. We're dog setting right now. We got two doggies here. Do you hear them barking in the background? My wife's not home right now, so I don't know. So they're having a time of their lives by themselves and barking, saying, "Hey, let me in." Have you heard of Kodai? Kodai is a, it's your own version of Netflix or Amazon Prime. And the folks at makeyouseof.com have a pretty good article on this. Again, Kodai is a program for streaming media content that you own. It's open source, which means it's free and anyone can contribute to the project. It began life as the Xbox Media Center. Oh, and the original developers still maintain Kodai, and there's a large community of developers contributing to the project. Currently, Kodai is available for Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, iOS, and Raspberry Pi. The source code is open to all as well, and you can put it on devices like the Amazon Fire TV Stick or your smart TV. So I'm going to be investigating this. Definitely something we're going to play around with, okay? There's a good article, again, at makeyouseof.com talking about iPhone security and 7 ways to make your Face ID more secure. This is a pretty good, some of the stuff I was like, oh, that's cool. Let me look at my settings. And I think this is pretty slick here and how to temporarily disable Face ID and all this type of activities that you may want to consider. So I'll link up and be in the show notes on that as well. Lyft, well, their IPO is, for most of you that are listening, today. Lyft is set to cruise onto Wall Street with its debut. And how much are they going to try to raise? Now, the IPO could give Lyft a valuation of roughly $20 billion, significantly higher than its $15 billion estimated value as a private company. A lot of folks that started Lyft over there are going to get rich tomorrow. So Lyft debuts is the first of many expected public offerings this year. If it all goes planned in 2019, Uber, Airbnb, Pinterest, Slack, and Palantir, among other tech companies, expected to go public. Analysts think that Uber, the most highly valued private company, could be worth as much as $120 billion after going public, which would make it the biggest IPO in U.S. history. I think Lyft is going to go big. I'm a big Lyft fan. I've been riding mostly Lyft really since they started, Uber started having their major harassment type issues over there. So we'll see how it goes tomorrow. So I'm not following politics too close. I'm trying because it's just like the 2020 presidential stuff is already running. The people are already out campaigning. And I'm just like, please just kill me now. I don't want to hear any of this. But Amy Klobuchar, is that how you pronounce her name? Wants broadband in every household by 2022. She says that if she's elected president in 2020, she would implement a $1 trillion infrastructure plan, including a bold initiative to roll high-speed internet to every household by 2022. A trillion? A trillion? You think it's going to cost $1 trillion to get internet to the rest of America? Come on. A trillion? Maybe 100 billion, but a trillion? She says she had accomplished this by closing the urban-rural digital divide by working. Who's going to pay for that? To correct the current broadband map, something that has been hotly criticized. Now, that needs to be fixed. Klobuchar specifically has been an advocate for dig-once policies that would push ISPs to lay out internet infrastructure at the same time as federally funded roads are being paved. The question is, why are we not doing this? Why isn't the government, if the government is federally funding road reconstruction, why are we not during that construction? Why isn't the U.S. government dropping the fiber in? If the ISPs won't, the government drops the fiber in, then makes the ISPs pay to use that fiber. How stupid are we? And you know, what's it take? What extra money does it take to drop, to trench in? Well, you got roads tore up. You're working on sewers, you're working on water, everything. How hard is it to drop in fiber? We are so dumb. Why haven't we been doing this already? If any of you like are on city councils or anything like that, and your city is going to start repaving roads, you know, I hope if you were on a city council or doing any of this kind of stuff, you would say, hey, by the way, Why don't we drop fiber in while we're at it? The minimal cost to drop it in, it has to be like ridiculously almost to nothing. And yet, then we can start taking control a little bit more of our broadband. You know, sure, it's going to take 20 years to get fiber in. But so what? Start now. We should have been doing it for 20 years already. I was pricing broadband in where I'm going to have my studio in Michigan. And it looks like the fastest speed available is 400 down, 20 up. But there, it looks like maybe 1 gig service is available. Hold your hats. I never got the upload speed, what it would be available. But 1 gig down was $249 a month for business rates. I can swallow that. If I have symmetrical, which I doubt, but it's 420 on the business lines. I was actually looking at the town I'm in has two internet service providers. So probably I'm going to be putting in two drops. I think it's the only way I'm going to get enough bandwidth to do what I want to do. And once again, you know, business broadband is, it's crazy. It really, really is. My sister's got a drop already in her building. So we're talking about it and we might push her speed up and we'll have, two drops. You know, I just have to punch a hole and run a LAN cable through. So, time will tell on how that, but again, it's on the same node. So, you know, it may not be even worth it because if I'm pushing 5-6 megs and I take hers and I push 5-6 megs, yeah, you guys get my point. So, we'll only know once I get there. But one thing's for sure, with the advent of me using the Wowza server, that has been pretty solid here lately. And, that really, lowers the amount of bandwidth I need with the exception of the Skype stuff. Inmates in Finland are training artificial intelligence as part of a prison labor program. So prison labor is usually associated with physical work, but inmates in two prisons in Finland are doing a new type of labor. They're classifying data to train artificial intelligence algorithms for a startup. Though the startup in question is called Vanu, They see the partnership as a kind of prison reform that teaches valuable skills. Other experts says it plays into the exploitative economics of prisoners being required to work for very low wages. Well, they got the contract. Who cares? And basically, they're doing stuff like two articles, a news article that talks about Apple, and then maybe something that's another article talks about the Apple industry. And they have to say this is about Apple, the tech company, and Apple that you eat. So anyway, that's happening in Finland. MGM Epix is now streaming services and now available on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. These dogs drive me crazy, and I have no way to yell at them. In February, MGM launched a streaming service for its premium channel, Epix, and it's available for $5.99 a month. And what does it have available on it? Hey, be quiet. Wow. Sorry if I yelled in your ear, everybody. Again, it's on the Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So if you're interested in the Emmy, it's like Berlin Station, Deep State, Elvis Goes Here. What other stuff is available? I don't have the full list, but I'll definitely take a look. Again, another little whack at our wallets, $5.99. Sony is merging electronics division, hiding staggering mobile losses. Their mobile division lost so money, it wiped out all profit Sony had. Sony Mobile has lost 100.6 billion yen or $910 million at current exchange rates. Sony Mobile lost enough in the most recent quarter to completely wipe out all of Sony's profits from movies. Over the last year, it lost more than a camera division earned in profit. Yep, they're in trouble. There's a good article over here on The Verge, and you know, I guess I haven't been paying attention to the news. I guess I don't, you know, I stay away from it, but I understand that the Midwest, some areas have had some extraordinary flooding going on. But AT&T is working with the Argonne National Laboratory scientists and their supercomputing power. The telecommunication company hopes to protect its infrastructure from flooding and extreme weather events and a projected increase as climate change continues. Of course, they had to throw that in there. So they're basically looking at where their towers are and trying to make determinations on where they're going to run new lines and so forth, and what's going to happen to their above ground copper wire service when stuff happens in storms. So they're trying to get smart on what's going on with their infrastructure to plan for the future. So it's kind of interesting article in that regards. Apparently, there's a bug out there called Sirius Magneto, and it will likely be exploited in the wild by card skimmers. This vulnerability in e-commerce platforms is putting as many as 300,000 commerce sites at risk. So it's a SQL injection vulnerability that attackers can exploit with no authentication required. Hackers could exploit the flaw or take administrative control of administrative accounts, assuming the hacker can download usernames and password hashes. So where is this on? What is the platform? It's Magneto. Magento is the actual platform. So the ones that are affected are Magento Commerce, Magento Open Source versions. Anyway, the links in the further. So if you are running any e-commerce stuff, be aware there's some issues out there, and I don't know if there's patches or not. Twitter may label notable tweets that violates its terms. It will still take down direct violent threats and other tweets that cross the line, but they're considering a label again for tweets that violates its rules, but it believes the tweet should remain on the platform because they're in the public interest. Oh, so are they going to start flagging the president's tweets? Twitter's head of legal policy and trust said in a Washington Post interview, such a label could put some context around a tweet so people are aware that the content is actually a violation of our rules and is serving a particular purpose and remaining on the platform. So that's an interesting development here. So they may label notable tweets that violates its terms. The FTC fined Office Depot $25 million for bogus virus scans. I wonder how much you're going to be able to collect. They probably collect about 30 bucks from Office Depot. But they allegedly lied to customers in order to get them to pay for tech support. The retailer offered consumers a free virus scan, which would claim to the person's claim that the person's computer was infected with malware, even if it wasn't.
Wow.
To carry out fake scans, Office Depot used a piece of diagnostic software called PC Health Check, which was created and licensed by support.com. While the tool was supposedly running a virus scan on the customer's computer, the results it produced were actually based on a series of questions that the customers asked prior to the scan. Those questions include whether the computer is running slowly, received virus warnings, crashes often on display pop-up ads. If a person answered yes to one of the four questions, they would be told their machine has malware. Office Depot would then offer to fix a problem, charging up to $300 for an unnecessary repair. It's like going to the car salesman. Oh, yeah. Your car's smoking a little bit as they pour oil in your carburetor. There's been a lot of talk. I'm switching gears here. A lot of talk recently about BBC wanting to add third parties to its sound apps. They're trying to balance Apple and Spotify dominance in podcast and music. So earlier this week, the BBC pulled its podcast from Google Podcast app and the assistant platform after determining that it wasn't getting enough out of the relationship, quote unquote, specifically noting that Google wasn't providing it with enough, quote unquote, audience data and search links to its own sites and services. So in other words, Google wasn't providing enough spy information on its listeners. So the BBC announced it's working on an expansion of its own sounds app. It's in talks with other media companies to add their podcasts and live streams to it. And MoveIt hopes will help out not just the BBC itself, but other media owners to find some more competitive leverage against not just Apple, not just Google, but also Apple and Spotify. Oh, they're getting worried here. So I think the BBC, what they've done here is a bad thing, to be honest with you, and having their shows pulled from Google. Who's it hurting? The Android users. So you Android users out there, if you're searching for BBC podcast, you can't. You have to go to the BBC now and find them. They're not in search no more. They're removed. You can't use the Google Podcast app no more. It's removed. It's craziness. Why would you ever shut down podcast distribution? I don't care where you listen. We are everywhere you listen these days. So, you know. All right, eBay's using AI to help you shop for similar looking items. I keep hearing this, AI. Of course, we made an announcement yesterday about AI too, but when you're shopping, you probably have a general look in mind. But basically, eBay's using some algorithms. I was looking for some shoes, and they say if you look for a certain type of shoes, they're going to suggest some other shoes that are similarly looking and maybe cheaper. So that's kind of a cool feature. These dogs are going crazy. All right, the big news I was going to talk to you about at the beginning of the show. Verizon has launched a free service for identifying and blocking spam calls. Part of the features are free. Some of the features cost $2.99 a month. I immediately signed up for the $2.99 plan. The free gives you spam detection, spam filter, and report numbers. The call filter offers caller ID, personal spam list, personal block list, risk meter, and spam lookup. This app, I immediately downloaded. I will be letting you know how it works. It's called Verizon Call Filter. And this, to me, is fantastic. Before your phone even rings, it will verify that a call is actually coming from the number it's posing as. The system is designed to prevent spammers from spoofing your local area code to make it seem like a call might be legitimate. This has all happened to us. So very, very exciting. It's available now. I downloaded it. I immediately went premium just because I've had so much trouble personally. I'll let you know next week how it's gone. Consumer spending in apps to reach $156 billion across iOS and Google Play by 2023. Annual spending, this insane $156 billion. 2018, I think it's, what is it? 62 billion. That's a huge increase, 16.8% growth year over year. Amazing. Latin America's even going to be bigger. Bigger growth rates, not as much spend, but bigger growth rates. Big one here tonight. Leaked email reveals Facebook's intense internal discussion over Alex Jones' anti-Semitism post on Instagram. And they're looking to ban him. So here we go. The next hammer is about to drop on Alex Jones. He's going to have no place to go but his website soon. And they're discussing labeling him as a hate figure. And this came from the Business Insider show. Wow, can you imagine being labeled a hate figure? Talk about a business, way to have your business, his business is, I think, already ruined, but can you imagine? I can't even imagine being, you know, we're going to start labeling people. I guess we label people as terrorists, right? So a hate figure. We have labels for us now. What happens when you become listed as a hate figure? Do you not able to get on airplanes? No, you know, do they, you know, you shunned in public or, well, you know, there's, what happens there when you're labeled a hate figure? That's new, right? Labeling people like that? I guess not. People have been labeled stuff for years, but that's a new one on me. Google Cuba deal could bring faster internet to Cuba. Google signed a memorandum with Cuba's telecom monopoly ETECSA to create a cost-free connection between the two networks. Doing so will boost Cuba's internet speeds, but this peering agreement comes with a catch. Cuba will first need to install a new undersea fiber optic cable to physically connect its network with a Google point of presence. And that could take years. So where do they have to run that to? Miami or something? I'm sure that's going to happen right away. So interesting. All right, final article tonight. Are we really in a new space race with China and Russia? Are we? No, but I think we want to explore, don't we? You know, I think Russian, Chinese, we've worked with Russia at the International Space Station, cooperated for science. Chinese, not so much. But the administration thinks we're in a space race today, just like we were in the 60s, and the stakes are even higher, which might be true. Space-based weapons could be very, very bad. Space-based weapons can do massive amounts of damage because of the terminal velocities they can build up on small objects. If you read any sci-fi magazines, all you got to do is accelerate a rock to a high enough speed and let it survive re-entry, and, you know, it has explosive power and hits the ground of a nuclear weapon. Are we there yet? No, but very well could be soon. All right, let me see if I've got any. I know I got some email. Got an email from Jack. Let me find this. He queried up when I think he sent me two emails. He did. Am I supposed to read this? Yeah, so talks about using my trust that I currently have for lighting and cameras and make it mobile. I didn't think about using the trust, Jack, so that was actually a really good idea. And so I won't give away too much of his ideas because I want everyone else to kind of weigh in here. Using some Raspberry Pis for some stuff. I think that would be cool too. And, you know, hey, Jack, if you want to, you know, as we get ready to, to put some stuff in place, if you want to come out to Michigan for a few days, we'll put you up in the villa I'll feed you and, should be fun. Let me, if anybody else wants to come out and help, let me know, you know. Should be a good time, and we can have all kinds of creative ideas. We can have a party at the new studio. But yes, Jack, we're going to get some measurements, and that's the key. And so we'll see the layout of this place. I'll draw, you know, basically I'll do an AutoCAD of how the space is currently laid out, and we can play with the design, because I think I'm going to be okay to, I don't know if I can bust walls out, but I think I can bust partitions out. So we'll have to clear that with my sister, but I think it's good because she owns the building. All right. Also, he forgot to paste a link to a piece of product. Oh, talk about this simulator. Yeah. That's kind of cool. I need to read up on that more. And also, we talked about the 737. You say, hey, the fundamental, we talked about the 737 MAX. But Jack says, the fundamental 737 MAX problem is uncommanded stable air trim movement, or in this case, automated movement that is hazard to safe flight. Every Boeing aircraft for the past 60 years has a procedure to follow for this potentially fatal problem called runaway stabilizer trim. The emergency procedure has one step: turn off stabilizer trim. I think I even know that myself. And the switches are easy to reach on the center pedestal. Reports of this happening on previous flights with both Lion Air and Ethiopian Air 737 MAX crash. As you know, there are multiple layers of aircraft safety. The pilot is always the final safety system for the aircraft flight. Now, we used to have this saying, or it's not a saying, in the military, the NATOPS is, a sound judgment is basically your sound judgment overrides anything that's in this book. It's a book that's about 4 inches thick of everything operational wise of an aircraft. Your sound judgment, at times, there's going to be stuff that wasn't covered in the book. So Jack's right. He says the pilot is always the final safety system for any aircraft flight, and maintenance is second to last. Reports of the Lion Air crash mentioned up to 4 previous flights with erratic pitch control. Why didn't aircraft maintenance ground the aircraft to fix and verify this fault? The pilots seem to figure it out on their own on all but the last 2. On the flight just before the one that crashed, reports of a jump seat pilot identified the problem and had the pilots turn off the stabilizer trim. They did that, landed the aircraft safely. Boeing is the first safety system by its design. In these 2 aircraft crashes, all the layers failed. 1, Boeing designed the MCAS system with, 1, a single sensor source, even when the second AOA, it's the aircraft operational attitude, I think, was available on that craft. This design is unusual for Boeing. Boeing did not give the pilots a display of the AOA sensor, so the pilot could not check it before or during the flight. 3, Boeing assumed that this MCAS system would be triggered once and solve the problem of an inexperienced pilot getting too slow. That's what happens when aircraft stall. You get too slow for your angle of attack. They push the nose over. It allows the aircraft to speed up. Basically, the aircraft recovers, doesn't stall and follow the sky. I'm ad-libbing for Jack. What they never considered was a system could be triggered multiple times. The FAA did not verify Boeing's number 2. This is how the layers failed. The FAA did not verify Boeing's MCAS design, which was able to move a flight control surface without pilot knowledge of authority. Big, big no-no. I haven't been involved in modifying aircraft systems where a system took over the actual autopilot and drove the airplane. Huge, huge test we had to do to make sure that system would not flip the airplane over. Literally, tons and tons of tests and verifications that the system stayed within its operational parameters. So anything that moves a flight control surface without the pilot's explicit permission is bad. 3, Ethiopian and Lion Air maintenance failed to correct the problem, which should have included verifying the solution. They failed multiple times. 4, the pilots on the fatal crash failed to identify the problem and take corrective action. He goes on to say the failure was poor design and training from Boeing, poor training from both mechanics and pilots, and lack of experience. Reports of at least 5 erratic pitch problems on U.S. aircraft did not result in a crash. Nobody has asked why there were no 737 MAX accidents in the USA, Canada, or Europe. Highly experienced pilots and mechanics correctly identified and corrected those problems. The 737 MAX is safe to fly, but Boeing's design did not give some pilots enough information to identify the problem. Aircraft must be properly maintained and flown. In these two accidents, every layer of the aviation safety net diamond failed the flying public. Your producer, Captain Jack. And for those of you that don't know, Jack was basically qualified, I think, to fly any aircraft in the 737, every aircraft in American Airlines fleet. He was at one time the senior captain at American. That's how we have a serious authority on this show telling us how it is. And, you know, I just, there is a huge, and it's going to get worse, huge shortage of pilots in the United States. Globally, there's a huge shortage. So what you're going to start seeing is pilots with fewer and fewer hours in the cockpit moving up. And we're as the general public, we're going to have to pay attention to this. It's very expensive to get your butt in a seat and get the required hours to be to the point where you're safe to fly a multi-engine aircraft with passengers on board. It's a big deal. Big deal. And with the massive shortage of pilots are coming to bear in the United States and across the world, some companies, and I'm not saying these two companies did so, but it appeared to me, at least based on what I've read, was that these pilots had like way few hours in this sophisticated of an aircraft. You got pilots that are leaving the Air Force and the Navy that have 2,000-3,000 hours in multi-engine, or maybe more, maybe 5,000 hours in multi-engine aircraft. They have seen almost everything. And yet they go into the training systems with the airlines, go through and get qualified, get checked out. Those are the guys I want to fly with. Those are the guys I did fly with for 25 years, you know, and, every once in a while, yeah, you had a rookie pilot, but he was paired with a experienced pilot. And, you know, there was a, you know, a little back slapping going on or whatever, you know, and people learned. And, but we'll see what happens. If your pilot's young, if he's old, you probably give two thumbs up. But if your pilot's young, you know, give him a look. All right, we're going to wrap things up here. These two barking dogs are driving me nuts. Jack, thanks for your input. Definitely appreciate it. Do you think I should get my pilot's license, Jack? I've got a whole bunch. I got a whole bunch of money to spend from my GI Bill. I got like 40 grand. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I'm going to need something to do, but I don't know. 55, you know, it might be fun, but I if I do it, I'm going to go multi-engine. I don't want to just sputter around in a Cessna because I don't trust them. You know, one engine to me is like, not so good. Two engines, you can still land. So, thinking about maybe trying to spend that money and get a multi-engine. I don't want to buy an airplane though. So maybe I'm wasting my money. I don't know. It's a thought. It'd be fun. Got to spend the money somewhere. Because I earned it, so I got to put it to use at some point. All right, so let's get out of here. Geeknews@gmail.com. Geeknews@gmail.com. It's been my pleasure to bring you the show. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of the Ohana, being part of the family. Don't forget about our sponsors at GoDaddy, geeknewscenter.com/GoDaddy. geeknewscenter.com/insider is your place to come in and provide, if you feel I deserve it, a $2, $5, $10, $15, $20, or $25 a month contribution to the show. $2 a day equals 6.7 cents. $2 a month equals 6.7 cents a day, approximately. So anyway, thanks everyone for being here. We'll see you the next time on the Geek News Central podcast. Everyone take care. Aloha.